Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there. And as always, we like to have you check us out on Facebook. And where else, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Check out the directory for all the cool stuff. Wherever you want to do something in your state, log on to TheValleyOutdoors.com and click on the interactive map for what is going on, happening, hot, and whatnot in your particular area or whatever destination you want to go to.
Well, there's a lot about to happen here.
Stuff.
Fishing. Turkey.
Yep.
What else we got?
Stuff. Is that it? Lots of fishing seasons are, some areas are open, the river, obviously, walleye's open, you got crappie, sunfish, the year-round bass is going to be coming open. When is it? Let me think. Yeah, walleye's open in Minnesota, Mother's Day weekend, I think it is, May. Lots of stuff going on. Yeah, lots of stuff going on. I was just having a brain fart there. I was like, what else is going on
here? Spinning on all the things
here
that are going on. Let's talk about those things that
are going
on.
All right, so we'll start out. We started with a high note. Now we're going to go to a low note.
Oh.
Yeah. Well,
we
you know,
to?
I can't. Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. That's my choice. I kind of put the show together to try and create flow, you know.
Got it.
And I'm not talking about the insurance chick either. Out of Racine, Wisconsin area, a 34-year-old hunter mentoring a 3-year-old child helped the youngster aim at and shoot another man and a 7-year-old child after mistaking their movement for a turkey. The incident occurred April 12th during the 2-day youth-only turkey season. Okay, so let's stop right there.
These accidents should never happen. So how do they just
A 34-year-old hunter is mentoring a 3-year-old child. A 3-year-old child should not be out being helped to aim a shotgun at a turkey. I'm all about getting youth in the outdoors. You just heard me talk about that, the fishing aspect, getting them involved. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, because I have 3-year-olds and no way.
When I went into the field with my mom and dad, we went hunting. Pheasant hunting. I had a BB gun and I never pointed it at anything other than if we were going to go shoot some target at this at the end of a drive, we were bird hunting. You learn to carry. You don't shoot. This is crap. This is normally the same thing that ends up happening. The reason that I'm just going to go on a limb. This person says, I want to go turkey hunting, and I happen to have a 3-year-old that I can take it and make it legal for me to go into the field and go hunting, and therefore I'm going to take that person to go, and we're going to shoot. And it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm sorry. You know me. I'll get on a soapbox when I have no problem with it, and this is one of them. Pellets from the 12-gauge shotgun struck the 7-year-old's head along with the man that was with that person, that 7-year-old, struck them in the left hand, shoulder, and backside as they hunted turkeys on state forest land in Rochester Township, Wisconsin. Department of Natural Resources Hunter Education Administrator said the victims were likely facing away from the shooter when they were hit. They did not believe the parties knew each other. They were treated in a nearby hospital. The wounded mentor, aged 40, was released. That was the person that got shot. After receiving treatment, the child remained in the hospital with non-life-threatening wounds. DNR would not release the names or genders of the two youngsters given their age. They also declined to release the names of the mentors pending further investigation. I'm going to go through this whole story because this is ridiculous. The incident occurred when the shooter's mentor saw movement and thought it was a turkey fantail. The man then kneeled beside the 3-year-old to help hold, aim, and fire the semi-automatic shotgun. Whatever, it doesn't matter. The shotgun moved about 35 yards away. The woods had a brush understory, but it wasn't dense. It wasn't a field either, and there was some cover between them. Review of the online DNR incident summary since 07 found the shooting involved the youngest shooter and victim on record. Previously, a 9-year-old boy shot a 48-year-old man in the upper right arm with pellets from his shotgun while hunting mourning doves in Wisconsin in September of 2012, and a 13-year-old boy shot a 9-year-old boy in the foot with a .22 while plinking at birds in Polk County in 2019. All Wisconsin hunters born on or after January 3rd, 1973 must pass a state-certified hunter education course to hunt alone or mentor others on hunting. The incident report said the 3-year-old mentor did not have a Wisconsin hunter safety certificate, but he was military exempt because he trained and received instruction in the armed forces. He said he wouldn't predict if the child's mentor would face prosecution, said the DNR assigned a recreation warden to investigate the incident. Once the agency finishes the investigation, it'll turn it over the evidence and findings to the Racine district attorney. They'll decide whether to press charges. Glad everything's okay. Wisconsin is one of an estimated 35 states with no minimum hunting age. Wisconsin minimum age was 12 years old through the 1900s, but in 2009, they lowered the restriction to 10 for children being mentored. In 2017, they let parents decide when children can hunt with a mentor and remain within arm's reach. Youngsters, they must buy a license once they're 12. They cannot hunt alone until 14, which those all make sense. I think the parent thing is wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but... So, yeah, 2026, number of hunting incidents, turkey hunting, 2026, we already have one, 2025, zero, 2024, one, 23, zero, 22, 2022, zero accidents, 2021, one. I mean, yeah.
We shouldn't ever have the one.
No.
Well,
sending out the... equivalent of 208,000 to 230,000 hunters each spring the past 20 years. Wisconsin's recorded 4 fatalities and 31 shooting accidents in the turkey season. No one got shot during the past 3 or 4 seasons. And the most recent shooting fatality was in 2017.
So almost 10 years ago.
I'm sorry. This is just frustrating. You can't fix stupid. And that's it. I know I sound like a garage logic kind of guy, but you can't. How do you fix stupid? You just don't. The crazy stupid things that go on, it's just ridiculous. So let's go on to positive things.
Please.
Okay.
That would be good.
So we talked about spooling up fishing line last week. We were going through it and checking things out. My number one thing we mentioned, just as a refresher, I've switched pretty much almost everything that I do outside of most of my sunfishing, crappie and sunfish, panfish, to braid. And the prime reason is I like the feel of it. It casts much farther. And I use a fluorocarbon leader. So I never really have to worry about what's going to, the fish are going to see, right? If I break a line, I break the line. But I like to have that option because if you run braid to the jig or whatever, it doesn't provide good break capability.
Sure.
It cuts your fingers up really bad.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know, so anyway. So going forward, walleye fishing strictly, I pretty much stick with 10-pound test braid. 10-pound test for just about everything if I'm a walleye. And then I'll go to, believe it or not, I'll go to a 12 or 15-pound fluorocarbon because you're always going to have less strength. It's going to get nicked, and that way you're upscaling it, and you're not going to have to worry about it. The fish aren't going to see it anyway. So that's kind of the direction I go with it. Now, this is a time of year when we've talked about it before. You may not have heard it. One of the unique things is if you have old line on one reel, take the line off your existing reel that you want to swap. If you have the braid on, take it off and spool it onto the reel that has nothing on it. And here's the reason. Braid generally doesn't go bad, period. You simply take the line that's got a little bit of a used portion of it, it's probably 40, 50, 60 feet of it, and you spool it on. That's now at the base of the other spool. You now have the exposed line that was at the base. That's fresh. You have basically, you've recycled the line. You don't need to get new line. Of course, check it to make sure. But when you do this, just make sure that you actually check that line at the end. It should look great unless you've done this 3 or 4 times. Should
right,
be a problem.
But you should be able to get at least 2 re-spools.
At least. And don't be afraid. If you've re-spooled it, spool in the other side, cut some line off if you have enough line left, and go for it.
All right.
And you're going to be happier. If you have a larger spool reel, that's the other thing. Don't be afraid to put some backing on it and use that same thing. Count out how much line you've got, figure out the distance, your average cast that you're going to deal with, and use it. There's no reason not to, because that braid does not, it just doesn't go bad.
Sure.
If you're running a black braid or a dark colored braid, you can see it when it oxidizes. If it's starting to get that color, you may get a shed. It looks like it's shedding. Don't be afraid to peel that or cut that off as well. And that's a big thing. Monofilament, there's nothing you can do. You got to peel it. Get rid of it. It's going to coil. It's going to take a set. It just doesn't
re-spool
it,
like
it
that.
It just doesn't do that. One of the other things I think that's important too, when you're spooling a line, there's a lot of different ways to do it. When you're doing a spinning reel, you know, sometimes people put the line in a bucket and let the reel, the spool you're pulling the line off of, that works. But the number one tool for myself that I use when you're in a situation with monofilament, et cetera, and you're re-spooling, buy a re-spooling tool. It's electric. If you push the button, you feed the line into the head, and it just peels the line off like nobody's business, and you're done.
How much do those cost?
$10.
Okay.
It's a cheap investment. It's got a hook sharpener on it too. So it's a true multi-tool, and it works quite well. But yeah, don't mess around, because invariably, this is one of the things when I do seminars, invariably, we as fishermen are lazy. You can be out not catching fish. You've got all the lines out. It's a beautiful day like today or last week.
You don't
want to
waste time.
No, last week, you know, during the week, it was 80 degrees. You're sitting out in the boat and you're like, this is great. I like being here. Fishing is an enjoyable sport. You don't always have to work at it. The problem I find myself at is I always work at it. And I'm like, I need to learn to relax a little bit when I'm in the boat. But the point really comes down to when things aren't working, the odds are scenario, you're not going to change because you're just comfortable. And if they're not biting, it's not because I don't have the right bait. I've got the right bait. What you need to do is make sure you take advantage of all the key pieces and parts of things that can make you successful and help you be successful and apply them, because that gives you the opportunity to get that fish of a lifetime. That gives you the opportunity to get a limit of fish. That makes that fishing time in the water that much better. And you've done all the things you need to make sure that you're going to get that success. If you bring friends out, it's the same thing. You just want to make sure that you're getting the best possible experience all the way around. And that little bit of extra prep time is a pretty
big deal.
It's
a big difference.
Yep,
for
it
sure.
Is. Going to some of the recommendations, I look at an article I pulled. When you're filling a spinning reel, it's a challenge because you look at when the line's coming off the spool, the line starts to get coiled and starts twisting. Just make sure you apply pressure on the line. That's one thing. Or you have it in a bucket so that it's going to roll and move on its own. That's one of the biggest things that you want to deal with. Make sure that that's going to be the case. Bait casters, it's easy. The spool rolls off one way, it goes back on the exact same way on the other spool. But apply pressure. And most important thing on any of these things is, even if, let's say you're putting your coil of line on your spinning reel, you put it in a bucket to allow it to rotate, make sure that you put it through a plastic bag over, put it in a book, the binder of a book, so that it's going to keep tension on it if you don't have somebody there that can hold it.
Sure.
Anything that you can do to keep pressure on it. And the reason is you need to have that tight connection, because the first 5 or 6 casts you go out, if it's not tight, you will end up with the biggest bird's nest you've ever seen in your entire life. So that's generally one of the biggest things. The second thing is don't spool up with a line that's way bigger than what should be on the reel. If you have a 12-pound test line and you're going to put it on a 1,000, which is a smaller reel, you're going to have a bad day. If you do the same thing with a whatever the test is, it's not going to work. And the reason is that coil line is not meant to hang on that tight a spool. So buy the appropriate line based on that. The third thing is, when you get to the end and you're ready to say, I've got enough line, too much is not the right way to go. Try to go an eighth of an inch below the lip of the reel for the spinning reel. Same thing holds true with a baitcaster. If you overspool a baitcaster, if you've ever experienced that, you'll have line going behind the actual spool, and then you're going to be out there with either a cast that you lost your bait on because it snapped the line, or you've got a big mess and you have to pull a spool out in the boat when it's raining, crappy, and ugly. So take the time to do it right the first time, and you're not going to have a problem with it. One of the other things that you can do as well, there's a kind of a treatment that you can put on the line. And I'm not a conditioner line fan myself. KVD, they make a line and lure conditioner, something like those things. They can help you, and they will make the line or help the line retain into the reel and not get all funky and twisted and a big mess and a bird's nest. So take the time to do it right the first time. Enjoy that time in the water, because you know what? If you don't do it right, you're going to be kicking yourself. You're going to tie that rod back up, throw it down in the rod storage area, and call it a day with that rod. And when you're taking the time to prep a bunch of rods, utilize them for what they're for. I got a jigging rod, a crankbait rod. Let it all work out for you. Take the time to do it right and enjoy the time in the water rather than be frustrated and saying, why didn't I do it the right way?
Right.
I've been there, done that, and it's not good.
Yeah,
it's,
just take it from Eric. You don't want to do that.
No. I've got enough hours doing this that it's an experience you do not want to go through. So, well, tell you what, everybody, we certainly appreciate you guys hanging out with us today. This is the Valley Outdoors for Ava, myself, Eric. We are out. I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Get out and enjoy the outdoors, even though maybe who knows what the weather's going to provide us with.
Know.
We're not sure, but just get out there and enjoy it anyway. What the heck? Have fun. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.